Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to All Exits Closed. My guest is Captain Cookson, and he is going to talk about coronavirus.
Hello.
Hi, Peter. Hi, we're on the air.
Okay, can you hear me well?
Yep, I can.
Good.
So we're going to talk about COVID 1 year later. So as a doctor, what have you learned about this epidemic?
Oh, okay. It's huge. pardon me. My focus has been on the dispersal, that is the spread of the disease, and the response by the organism, the virus, to the host's humans that have contracted and spread the disease. My concern is the evolution. Can you hear okay?
Yep, I'm fine.
Oh, okay. The concern is the evolution of the virus into an organism that is better suited by in terms of the virus to infecting greater number of humans and making those humans that it infects more sick. What we have seen is the organism has evolved to produce a variant that has the capacity to attach itself to the host cell in a way that is superior to the original, what we call the wild virus. That's the one that originally spread around. And then as a result, then more of these specialized, put it that way, or variant viral particles then attaches to more of the cells, then that produces greater numbers of viral organisms, which then can infect more of the cells in the primary individual and then spread more easily to friends and neighbors and other persons in the community. So we have seen a greater spread. A phenomenon similar to that occurred in 1918 and 1919. It's always important, in my opinion, to look back and see, know your history, and know your history regarding the behavior of viruses. And certainly when I see a variation here, I look into the history of other viruses. And among the viruses that I looked at was the Ebola virus and the Lassa fever virus. What I saw there was a virus that mutated in a way or that developed in a way that enabled it to not only spread but to kill its hosts very quickly. And that is not a useful trait in terms of survival for the virus, because if it kills the host, then it doesn't go anywhere and it doesn't spread. So that's happened with Ebola and Lassa. But this particular virus is smart enough to know that you don't want to kill everybody. If you do, then you can't spread and you can't survive. And so it learned that particular lesson. I'm looking very carefully at reports of deaths of individuals who have contracted the coronavirus. And so far, those persons who are dying from the virus seem to be in the middle to very old, mid-range, middle age, 50s or so, up to 90-year-old folks. And that's where we see the lethality of the virus. And that's probably more likely to be related to the immune system deficiencies that we are beginning to see in this country, pardon me, and in Europe. And I want to segue slightly from there to point out and to underscore the what happens to people whose immune system is compromised by toxins in the environment and more especially in their food, where I am acutely aware of the shift in the demand of I would say, people who are aware of the fact that their food doesn't taste the way it used to, and that more and more people are developing sensitivities to food. And so they're switching to what has been termed organic food, which is food that adheres to, in order to achieve or to be awarded the title or the tag of organic, it must comply with or be raised in a very certain way that restricts the use of toxins, pesticides, herbicides, etc. And the processing end of the food chain system, very careful guidelines have been made up to be sure that food is not cross-contaminated with other foods similar in nature that had been contaminated by pesticides and herbicides. Anyhow, when you get these contaminated foods into your system, it tends to interfere with the immune system. And the immune system that we are becoming aware of, a huge component of that system, is in our gut. And so if you're eating poisons that kill or interfere with or impair the that segment, that important segment of our immune system, then you're going to get sick. And you're going to get, when you get sick, you get sicker, or you have, your symptoms are much, much worse. And unfortunately, that's what we're seeing. The Europeans are seeing the same thing, and they are restricting the use of certain pesticides, insect killers, and herbicides as well, especially ones that have originally been designed as antibiotics, believe it or not. And those antibiotics are incorporated into our food. And unfortunately, when you drink certain beverages from critters that eat food, eat silage that has been raised and contaminated with herbicides, why, those herbicides wind up in your gut. And they kill the organisms that are responsible for maintaining our healthful immune system. So that's one thing. And I don't see that changing for a long period of time. When you pay careful attention to the television and the advertisements on the television, and especially the pharmaceutical advertisements, and if you understand what they're telling you in the two-minute warning at the end of each one of those advertisements, you understand that what they're selling is an immune suppressant. And why are they selling immune suppressant? It's because the diseases that we are seeing in our age today are diseases of the immune system, an inactive or overactive immune system. Rheumatoid arthritis is a classic. Obesity is a disease of the immune system. Multiple sclerosis, amyotrophic lateral sclerosis, Parkinson's disease, dementia is probably a immune system disorder as well. So when I look at that, I'm saying, what's going on here, and can we expect that this will improve? The answer is not until there is a dramatic change in the production of food for the people who live in the Western Hemisphere and certainly Europe and around the world, wherever they're using large amounts of pesticides and herbicides. And I'm starting to see the folks in Africa being introduced to the, quote, Green Revolution, unquote, which is an effort to sell chemicals to farmers, including fertilizers. And they say if you apply this fertilizer, you can double your production. Well, very soon the soil becomes destroyed or dead, and your production starts to fall off. And the response to that is put more and more herbicides, pesticides, and fertilizers on there with the expectation that that'll solve the problem. It just defers the ultimate outcome, which is downward spiral in terms of production, and downward spiral in terms of the health and well-being, not only the farmer, but his family and those persons who buy the food that has been raised under those circumstances.
Okay, I've got a question for you.
Please.
You know, you and I have watched the news and watched the commentators.
Yes.
Over the past year about, you know, sickness and hospitals and mortality rates and stuff. But there has no conversation been about the foods we eat. If they talk about the coronavirus, they don't say anything about an immune system. They don't say anything about organic foods. Nothing. All they talk about is hospitalizations, medications, and survival rates, and maybe even death rates. Why has the fact of food and the immune system been left out of the conversation?
Okay. There's too much money involved in the food system and in the chemical systems that are currently used in the United States, pardon me, Canada, and Western Hemisphere, basically. And certainly if you go to South America and the huge producing, agricultural producing countries down there, and I say Argentina, Uruguay, not so much Paraguay. Yeah, Paraguay as well, I'm sorry. And Uruguay, Brazil, at least those are the ones that jump to mind immediately. There's huge amounts of money, colossal amounts of money going into those countries in the form of chemicals to produce soybeans primarily and other food crops or food-like crops. There's too darn much money. And when you start talking about them, then you get hit over the head by the people who are manufacturing those and who are careful to advertise in the mainstream media, either television or print media. So that's one explanation. We are not going to be told until there's a revolution in terms of, you know, who's doing the right thing? And I don't foresee that happening. As I look around, it's much too easy for them to influence the mainstream media to omit any discussions of the poisons that people are having. And I did allude to the fact that many people are becoming much more sophisticated when it comes to their food. And so-called junk food, unfortunately, is being left to those persons who are unable to afford real food. And that's where we are seeing a disproportionate number of hospitalizations and deaths in those individuals whose immune systems has been destroyed by the food. And we can talk about that, and somebody's going to call me up and tell me I'm crazy or that they will threaten me one way or another. But I am backed up somewhat by the fact that we have gone to the extreme measure of, on this little mom-and-pop operation here, getting organic certification. And if I get anything, somebody calls me up and says, you're all wrong, I'll say, go call the Northeast Organic Farming Association in Binghamton or Syracuse and talk to those guys. They are the experts. I just follow the rules. But I do know that it hurts to eat poison. And among the things that it hurts is it hurts your immune system right away.
Okay, so, you know, you say there's a lot of money being made because of pesticides and herbicides, okay? Over the past year, you know, people go into the hospitals, you know, and there's an awful lot of money being made to combat this, you know, virus. There's tons of money being spent, but yet there's the main aspect of this is not being addressed. So money is being spent. It could be better spent, but it's not. Why?
Money. Exactly. Now think about what you hear about on a daily basis, and when I vis-a-vis the coronavirus, and that is vaccinations, numbers of vaccinations,
right,
response to vaccines, which vaccine
right
is better, which one is worse. which one lasts longer, which one do we know if they last, and so on and so forth. It's all vaccinations. And I suggest that you reflect just momentarily on the way back in January 2020 when the federal government of the United States was awarding vast numbers, vast quantities of money to vaccine producers in an effort to stimulate or to facilitate or just to buy the vaccine production ultimately. And this, the pharmaceutical industry is a huge, huge industry that they don't want anybody to hear about an alternative to the vaccine. If you haven't gotten your vaccine, then you can't get on a plane, et cetera. There are all sorts of other things in the offing, in my opinion, that will be required if you haven't had your vaccine, if you haven't spent the money on that. So my suggestion is not only are the chemical companies got a big stake in the coronavirus, the insurance companies, the health insurance companies, just staggering amounts of money are being made in this as a result of this pandemic for a variety of reasons, and that's something else we'll get into another day. But the pharmaceuticals and the chemical industries are it's a killing. They're making a lot of money selling vaccines, so that's all we hear about. And to the exclusion of what's really happening. I had a discussion the other day with a gentleman who's well-informed, and he was puzzled when he realized that we were vaccinating persons whose immune system was compromised in a variety of different ways, and including having been taking various pharmaceuticals, and in addition to that being, 80 years old, 90 years old, in a environment that was, a contagious environment, an environment which is conducive to spreading the virus. And so you're vaccinating these people who don't have an intact immune system, whose immune system is not able to respond appropriately to a vaccine. And my suggestion was to consider that this was a political decision rather than a medical decision.
Well,
I know that sounds awful. Everybody's, you should vaccinate grandma and grandpa, but look at it carefully. What grandma and grandpa need is they need to have a mask. They need to have an adequate care facility. That is not what's happening in our nursing homes, and I hope that this investigation of our leader in this state will reveal the desperate situation that our senior citizens encounter or are living in when they go to a nursing home. And a vaccine is not going to cure that situation. It's much, much bigger than a shot in the arm.
Okay, so would you say that probiotics and organic food will help that?
Oh, very definitely. Absolutely.
Okay.
And my wife and I are very adamant about that, and we each day take our drink of kefir, and Karen drinks her yogurt, and then we eat vegetables that have high fiber content that we raise here, and that's what we're doing, and we feel really good, much better about it. I take my vitamin D and my vitamin C and my zinc tablets in the morning, and I'm doing much better, I can tell you that. But both of us have contracted the coronavirus, both of us very early in 2020, long before the state of New York was aware of the fact that the virus had already found its way to upstate New York. We got it.
So without people changing their dietary habits, taking probiotics, without being aware of what's better to eat than, would you say that the coronavirus is going to be around for a long time?
Oh, most assuredly. Yes. It's just not going to disappear or go away. And it is my opinion that the virus will settle down in various parts of our body. I am quite confident that the central nervous system is an area that this virus enjoys. I can tell you it's in my head. And some of the people who are friends of ours who have had long-term coronavirus complications are relating stories that are consistent with an irritation or destruction of central nervous system brain systems or areas that are responsible, for instance, for heart rate, that are responsible for respiratory rate, breathing. I have had patients who have spontaneous onset of very rapid heart rate without associated exercise. No reason whatsoever. All of a sudden, their heart starts running at 120, 130 beats a minute, and they can't make it stop. Then other patients who have normal oxygenation. This is, you know, they've been put on a treadmill in a doctor's office, and they're checking their oxygen and their heart rate and so on. With a normal oxygen level in the bloodstream, they're breathing as if they are running a marathon. And then all of a sudden, it stops, like somebody flipped a switch. And they go back to normal rate of respiration and heart rate. And the doctor looks at them, and the doctor told this one friend of mine, if I had not had those exact same symptoms that you are complaining of, I wouldn't believe you. And because the laboratory testing doesn't verify it. We don't know what the heck to do.
Let me ask you this question.
Please.
In 1918, when the Spanish flu was going through the world with a vengeance.
Yes.
Back in those days, there was no vaccine.
Correct.
But it kind of disappeared. Am I correct?
Yes, indeed.
Okay, so what makes you think that this won't?
Okay, the, quote, disappearance, unquote, is a result of the mutation or shifting of the virus to a less virulent form so that it's not killing off its hosts. And now, today, our response to the virus is to get a flu shot every October. Is that virus the same one that we're seeing in 2021 that we saw in 1918? No. What we're seeing now is a mutated form. It's a influenza virus, okay, just like the virus that was here in 1918-1919.
Okay.
However, I would also call your attention to the fact that many survivors of the 1918-19 influenza epidemic had the virus take up housekeeping or went into hibernation or hiding in the cerebellum, that is in the central nervous system of the brain or the brain of the survivors. And we began to see a epidemic of Parkinson's disease in the 1960s and 1970s. And those were the survivors of the influenza epidemic of 1918-1919. And all of a sudden, we have a huge number of people developing Parkinson's disease who, when carefully questioned, each of them had a history of surviving the pandemic of 1819. Then that cohort, that segment of the population died off, and the Parkinson's disease went away. So the point that I'm making is that this virus probably will live inside my brain and inside the brain of other individuals who have survived the coronavirus 19 epidemic. My wife is another one who had the polio vaccine. I'm sorry, the polio virus, and she has post polio syndrome that is bothersome. Now, is that virus still living? Probably. Is it still inside her? Probably. Is it going to erupt? No, it won't. Her immune system is good. So what happens to the people who have post-COVID syndrome will be that everything will be fine. They will survive and live long and prosper until they get sick, until they develop an overwhelming disease, or until their immune system either gets debilitated or gets poisoned by something in their environment or in their food. Then it will come back.
So and
then they
no
will. They'll have new symptoms.
Okay. There's no telling when that will occur. Could occur 20, 30, 40 years from now.
That is
you
correct.
Say that was after?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. Exactly. Right. And it's
okay.
Dependent upon. It is my opinion that the virus will stay will behave itself until the chronic surveillance that our immune system carries out on a daily basis, looking for tumor cells, looking for bacteria, looking for other viruses every day, all day long. Our immune system is on the watch. And then when the immune system gets lazy, gets tired, or gets bombarded with suppressants like steroids, then the virus will say, oh, the cops are gone. Let's, get out of we got to get out of jail free card or whatever the heck what analogy you want to use. But they, the viruses then may resume their activity and get busy and cause symptoms.
Well, so
does that make
sense?
What, dear?
Yes. We have about a minute left. To everybody listening, COVID 1 year later, what should they be aware of?
Well, I'll tell you what, and that is that if you go out of the house, put a mask on. And I have taken to double masking. And when I go to the grocery store, I put on latex gloves. And I used to save the latex gloves, but the information that I'm getting on that, that's pretty stupid. You probably ought to get rid of them. And I wear the masks, and I reuse the masks. But they need to protect themselves from getting infected in the first place. And go ahead and get a vaccine. The vaccine will protect you, will stimulate your immune system. And if it, even if it just stimulates the T cell system, that's the long-term immune system component, that's better. That's better than doing what happened to me, which is to actually get the virus, get sick, and have your immune system tuned up or stimulated in that fashion. Get the vaccine, and
okay.
It's
so
a better,
Peter, we're
better
out
deal.
We're out of time, and I'm sure that you and I will have many other discussions about the coronavirus and
probably
the effects on us and the economy and so forth. So you have been listening to Dr. Peter Cookson. I'm Cynthia Pooler. This is All Exits Closed. If you like this show, follow us on Twitter. Thanks, Peter. Have a great day, and thank you, everybody, for listening.
Okay.
Bye.
Give me a call in a minute.